Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
A blood-soaked mystery in Colorado has people asking, did he intend on going on a mass killing spree, or was he simply trying to go on the adventure of a lifetime? And then we travel to a convenience store to meet a man who's just stopping by to pick up a few items. Little does he know he's about to come face to face with one of the most insidious creatures that may exist in the multiverse. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. I hope you guys are having a great day too. I hope you guys can hear the excitement in my voice. This is the beginning of season 23. I know there was a kind of a long break that we took, but that's because of everything was good. I was doing the Port Gamble Ghost Conference, and it just kind of acted a little bit weird. I apologize that it's been such a long break, but I am super excited to be back. Oh, and I also want to say this too quick before we really get started. We're going to do it again. 5 years going, we're going to have a Thanksgiving live stream on YouTube. And I'll tell you this, guys, this time I'm going to use a better microphone. So I can upload it to the podcast. It'll be podcast audio quality, but Thanksgiving live stream. We're going to go ahead and start it at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. They usually run about an hour and a half, 2 hours. So if you got nothing to do, you're like, Jason, I'm going to kind of be with my family. But if you don't, we'll have Thanksgiving together. So Thanksgiving, that for people who don't live in America, that's November 23rd, this Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Be there and be hungry, and we'll eat together. I won't. I won't actually eat on the mic, but we're going to keep that tradition going. 5 years now, a Thanksgiving live stream special. And here's the thing, guys. I got so much stuff to talk about that what happened at the totally awesome Port Gamble Ghost Conference that I went to. I gave a presentation there. It's too much to even talk about in an intro. We're going to be spreading it out over the next couple episodes, really the next couple weeks, because so many new great ghost stories, met so many great new people, and saw some old faces as well. I had so much fun at the Port Gamble Ghost Conference. We're going to be talking a lot about that, but let's get this season's... We're going to be talking a lot about that in the future, but let's get this season started right now. Walking into Dead Rabbit Command is one of our newest Patreon supporters, bringing in a big, nice, hot turkey. It's a couple days too early, but we'll eat it anyways. Give it up for Sovereign. Woohoo! Yeah! Yummy, yummy, yummy! We're gonna eat it all up! We're all clapping, wheeze, dancing, dancing with the turkey. What a way to make an entrance. Sovereign, you're gonna be our captain, our pilot this episode today. If you guys can't support the show financially through the Patreon or the merch store or anything like that, that's totally fine. It truly is. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. That helps out so much. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. Let's go ahead, Sovereign. I'm going to toss you the keys to the Jason Jalopy. Let's pull this bad boy out of the garage. We're leaving behind Dead Rabbit Command. Drive us all the way out to Colorado. Sovereign's pulling up to this parking lot. Looks empty. It's weird that we happen to end up here. It's really in the middle of nowhere where we're going. Pulls into the parking lot. No other cars are around. We're stretching in the cold Colorado air. And I go, okay, guys, let's do this. Open up the trunk of the Jason Jalopy. I have a bunch of bulletproof vests. We're all putting them on, strapping everything in. I'm handing you guys, rifles. And you're like, oh, Jason, what's going on here? Did you form a militia on your break? I don't see anything. I'm just putting on my helmet. We're all getting geared up. And then after we're all wearing all of this, you're like, Jason, this isn't a bulletproof vest. This is a piece of cardboard that you wrote bulletproof on. Yeah, sorry. I couldn't afford a bulletproof vest for everybody. I'm wearing like 10 of them. A couple of you guys are just wearing cardboard. But don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Now, step two, we're all geared up. It's time to go up there. And I'm pointing up to the top of a mountain. I'm pointing at Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park. There's two ways to get to the top. There's two ways to get to Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park. There is a back entrance that you can drive a car up to. That's usually for employees or like emergency personnel if you need to get someone out. Most of the people ride on a gondola, which I always thought was just a little boat in Italy, but I guess it's also the name, because I was confused when I read this in the article. I was like, wait, huh? There's a river that goes up a mountain? The gondolas are also those big plastic boxes you sit in to go up a mountain. So we're going to do that. So we're like all climbing into all these gondolas. You didn't even know what these were called, and now you're going to operate it? And I'm hot wiring them, because see, we're here before any of the employees. Just... and you see all the lights start turning on. Get on board. We're all going to ride on these gondolas, and we're going up to Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park. Now, what's interesting is this intro that I just gave is either the beginning of a terrifying or just bizarre mystery or kind of insensitive. And here's the thing. We don't know which. Because it could be a little insensitive. The reason why we're dressing up like this is because if we go with the official police story, then yes, technically we would be accomplices. Yes, we're in this gondola, you can't escape. You're already dressed up in this stuff. But I don't know. What I mean, listen, here's the thing. Are the police right, or is there something deeper in this? Was this mystery we're about to look into the story of a man on the verge of homicide, or a man trying to discover a deeper secret, but he needed to be heavily armed to do it? He needed to be ready for whatever forces he would face at this theme park. We don't know which. I'm kind of thinking it's more of the bizarre mystery thing, but who knows? We could all end up in trial. They could be playing this part of the podcast for an upcoming trial. I'm pretty sure this man is not who they thought he was. We're riding up these gondolas up to Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park. Glenwood, it's basically a theme park on the side of a mountain. So you got roller coasters. I mean, if you thought roller coasters were cool already, I don't. I hate roller coasters. I've been on one. It was the Smurf coaster when I was 15, and I was like, I'm never doing that again. Roller coasters on the side of a mountain. So you're like, whoa, they got those. It sounds like a pretty cool place to, if you're into roller coasters, not me, but roller coaster around a mountain. They also have a thing called the ghost mine, or sorry, the haunt. They also have this thing called the haunted mine drop. It's a drop ride. It's one of like those gravity rides where you sit in a chair and it drops you 110 feet into a mine shaft, straight down. Terrifying. And if you didn't think that was terrifying, you're like, that's actually not too scary, Jason. I've been on a lot of those vehicles, a lot of those types of rides. Back in 2021, a six-year-old girl was improperly strapped into this haunted mine drop ride, and the minute it dropped, she like went flying out and died. She fell 110 feet to her death. I mean, listen, there's a lot of horrible ways to die. I think any death where you go getting shot in the stomach and bleeding out, if you ever add in a cave, or inside a mountain to that, it's always worse. Getting crushed by a steamroller, like in the middle of the road, is bad. But if it happened inside a cave, it's worse. Because you think about it, like if you're getting crushed by a steamroller, let's say you're walking down the street. If you're running down the street, you probably could have made it, but you're walking down the street. A steamroller hits you, and you fall down. At least you can look up at the beautiful blue sky. As your internal organs are being pushed through your eyeballs, your eye sockets are popping out. All of a sudden, your intestines are shooting out of both eye sockets. At least for a brief second, you get to see, like, a cloud. It's raining. It's getting right in your eye as you're getting squashed. You know what I mean? There's something about dying outside as opposed to dying inside. I would much rather die outside. I'd much rather die outside during the day, on a beautiful day. Like I'm sitting on this rock and I'm looking out at the majesty of nature, and then I die. That'd be my number one choice. Dying at night. At least you could maybe see the moon or like a shooting star when you blew up. Shooting star is what killed you, an asteroid to the brain. Dying inside a house would be okay, right? Maybe there's like some cool pictures to look at. You're like, Jason, why are you so obsessed with looking at stuff as you're dying? Maybe if you paid attention to your surroundings, you wouldn't die. There's barbed wire flying towards me. I was like, oh, look at that painting. Is that a Van Gogh? Dying inside a cave, I imagine, would be the worst. But anyway, so she fell to her death. Six-year-old girl plummeted 110 feet to her death. Well, it's a tragic story for sure, but let's take a look at this story. It's October 28th, 2023. Very, very recent story. Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park. Oh, and I should also say there is a bunch of caverns there. You have the rides. You have the one ride that drops into a mine shaft, but there's a cavern tours where there's like rock nerds, geologists walking around being like, look at all these stalactites. Watch your heads. And you're like ducking underneath them and stuff like that. And if you look over in this direction, you'll clearly see more rocks. And you're like, I paid $36 to get up here. Rocks, rocks, rocks. There's a bunch of caverns over there. And I imagine like any cavern system, there's parts of the cavern you can't get to. I'm sure there are parts that are too dangerous where the water is like eroded away a portion, but you can't get in it because it's too tiny, or you guys can't go down there. That one's too dangerous. Come and look at this lame part of the rocks. Just stare at this rock wall for 10 minutes. We'll call it a tour. Turn around, go on a roller coaster. October 28th, 2023, the maintenance crew shows up. They're there early in the morning to get everything set up, make sure everything's running before all the visitors get there. And that is when a member of the maintenance crew finds a dead body in the women's restroom. They call the police. The police get up there and they don't know what to think of it either. They didn't expect to find a dead man here. Well, they did because they got the phone call. But what we're looking at here is a bizarre mystery that I'm surprised more people in the conspiracy theory community aren't talking about. His name was Diego Barajas Medina, 20 years old. Very, very young man. Shot himself in the head. So he's up in this women's restroom. He shot himself with a semi-automatic pistol that he had brought with him. It's next to him. The police go. He clearly shot himself. He'd shot himself in the head with a handgun. Committed suicide up in this bathroom. But, which is tragic enough. And the family is usually left asking the questions why. But this has so many layers to that. That's not all. Not that he just shot himself in the head. He was dressed in full tack gear. So he had a bulletproof vest. He had a ballistic helmet, which he had obviously taken off to shoot himself. He had a semi-automatic pistol. He had an AR-style rifle, which, you know, he had a bunch of ammo. He had the way that they go. Basically, his appearance made it look like he was a member of law enforcement. The way he was dressed, he even had patches on his clothing. That if you saw him at first glance, you would think he was a member of law enforcement. He had taken not the gondolas up, but he had driven his car up the maintenance road. And the police were able to search his car. In the car and on him, Diego had explosives. He had some with him. He had some in his car. He had fake hand grenades and real pipe bombs that he had manufactured. Guy totally kitted out. Rifle, handgun, explosives. The police believe, Jason, did you just have us dress up as a mass shooter? Hold on, because I don't think that's what happened here. The police believe that he was intending on being a mass shooter. Their belief is that he went up when no one was there and he was at Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park. And once people started showing up to the park, he was going to shoot a bunch of people. He's going to have a mass casualty event on the top of a mountain. It would have been very hard to get rescue vehicles up there. And then still you got to transport the victims out. The police go like, this would be horrible. If someone did a mass shooting at a place like this, you have families, it's a soft target, and it's remote. So when you look at the news reports, they're like, you know, it's tragic that this man killed himself, but the community is safe. We believe this was, he was planning this attack. And luckily, they're not saying luckily that he killed himself, but luckily this had an end that didn't result in dozens of people killed or wounded. But that is not what I think is going on here. I think, now here's the, we're going to have to put our conspiracy caps on real early this season, our first story, because this is the big mystery. According to all the police reports, according to the news, in the bathroom there is a message scrawled across the wall. And it said, quote, "I am not a killer. I just wanted to get into the caves." Unquote. What in the world does that mean? And there's two crazy things about it, but let's look at this first thing. "I am not a killer. I just wanted to get into the caves." The police, I mean, obviously after this, they began investigating this pretty heavily. They went to see his family. They've been combing through his social media. They went to his home. And everyone's saying there were no red flags. There was no previous behavior that would paint Diego as a mass shooter. Diego's older brother said, here's the thing about Diego. He'd recently lost his job. He was behind on the rent. And him and his brother lived together. He goes, he was behind on the rent. He had gone to the point where he had started selling things to earn money to pay for his rent. Like, he was just kind of in that young state of mind. A lot of us have been there. He goes, my brother was also obsessed with Call of Duty. He would play it all the time. But Diego was not a mass shooter. He was not someone who has all of the signs of going out and wanting to do this type of thing. He had, like they're saying, no red flags. His brother goes, there is no way he would be a danger to anyone. They've been combing through his social media. They can't find anything that would explain this. What's also interesting is that, remember, the fake grenades, you can get those where, you know, you can get those at Army surplus stores. The pipe bombs, you have to manufacture. You have to make them somewhere. And if he was ordering from them from somewhere, when they're checking the social media, you figure they would find that. The police believe that he made the pipe bombs, but when they went to his house, they could find no evidence of pipe bomb making materials. When you're making a pipe bomb, you're going to leave, you know, a little bit of gunpowder laying around. The fuse, you got to cut the fuse short, determining on how long you want to have before it goes off. It's a mess. There's filings. I mean, it depends if you're using a metal pipe or a plastic pipe, if you're going to have these filings. But generally, you get a piece of pipe, you thread it, and you got to drill through the cap, all that stuff. They couldn't find any evidence that pipe bombs had been manufactured in his home. They also couldn't find any evidence that he had pipe bomb making instructions, which is something you would want instructions for when you're building a bomb. It seems easy. But you need to know how much you're going to pack in and all this stuff, what the best type of shrapnel to use and all that. So you kind of want to look it up. They can't find anything that would make them think that he was a mass shooter. But the Garfield County Sheriff, his name is Lou Valerio, he said this to the reporters. He said, quote, "Given the preparation, given the amount of weapons and ordnance he had, it almost seemed very highly likely he intended to use those against the community. He chose not to." Unquote. Police are looking into it. FBI's looking into it. They can't figure it out. But they just go, he was probably going to do this mass shooting. I don't think that's what was the plan. I think they've actually done more investigation into it than I have. But I think he wanted to get into the caverns. I'm going to take him at his word. Because you're right, given the amount of preparation, the amount of money it would cost to get these guns, both of these guns have the serial numbers filed off. Again, if he did that himself, where? Wasn't at his home. Given the amount of preparation, given the amount of ordinance, he goes all the way up there. He's there overnight, apparently. And then he decides to kill himself. That doesn't make sense. I mean, mass shootings very rarely do, if ever. But I think he wanted to get into the caves. I think either through a delusion or through, like, I'm wondering if there is a local story up there about hidden bases, Illuminati behavior, underground reptilians. I'm not saying any of those things are truly up there. That's what I'm saying. He could have had a delusion that there was something hiding in the caves that he wanted to get to, that he wanted to attack them, or that there is something up there. Not innocent civilians, but if there is something in the caves in this park. It could have been a delusion. It could have been a local legend that he truly believed in. There could have been something up there. It's so weird to think that he would drive all the way up. I mean, again, if you're going to blow your brains out, or, I mean, you can do that anywhere. If you're going to do a mass shooting, again, unfortunately, you can do that anywhere as well. That's what the scary thing is about mass shootings. They're not taking place in military bases. Well, they have. Actually, there have been a few, but you know what I mean? The scary thing is that can happen anywhere. What was his connection to the park? Why did he go out of his way? Because he's from Carbondale, which is a nearby community. He's not actually, like, lives in the park. He's not, like, a hermit up there. Why would he go up there? And you go, Jason, you said in the beginning, because it's remote and it would be really hard to get people out of there. Yeah, again, but we're not finding any manifestos. Really, the only manifesto we have is two sentences. I am not a killer. I just wanted to get in the caves. Super bizarre story. And it could be that he was going to kill a bunch of people up there. And again, then why would he leave? He could have just written on the wall, I am not a killer. And he had shot himself. And you would then rightly think, like, if he was just going to go up there and commit a mass shooting, you would go, oh, he had second thoughts. But by putting the other part on there, it's just so bizarre. This truly is a mystery. And for me, I saw a little bit of people talk, because this happened, like, right before I went on break. I wanted to see if more information came out. That's why I didn't cover it right away. Why aren't more people talking about it in the conspiracy theory community? It's so bizarre, and it really makes you start to think about how... I do believe that parts of the conspiracy theory community is controlled. And it's controlled that certain conspiracy theories fall by the wayside. Think about this. We've talked about this several times on the show. We still do not know who blew up the Georgia Guidestones. We've done one or two episodes on it. No one else is talking about it. Huge event in the world of conspiracy theory. It was always a huge thing of who built them in the first place. That was like a boomer conspiracy theory. They blew up. No one's asking about it. It was a massive explosion in the middle of Georgia. No one is investigating it. No one is investigating it from the law enforcement angle or the conspiracy theory angle. And I think there's a reason. I don't know what the reason is. But I believe that mystery is being brushed aside. And I think this mystery, it's too early to tell either way. But this could end up being one of those big mysteries like the Somerton Man. That recently got solved, but it was a story about an unidentified body. It was a mystery of who the man even was and all the details surrounding his death. The Lead Mask case is a very famous story of two men who died up on a hill. They had donned lead masks and apparently had poisoned themselves. People have been trying to figure out who they were and why they did it for decades. Kenny Veach is a much more recent story, but there was a YouTuber, a vlogger type guy who would explore the wilderness and would go around caves, and he started telling people he found an M-shaped cave, and it gave him a weird feeling when he was near it, and he was going to go back and check it out again, and he's never been seen since. No one can find the cave he was talking about. I've never covered that stuff on my podcast because it's so well known. This story may become one of those. And because people are still investigating it now, I think it's important to... I'm not in any way saying to harass or even talk to the friends and family of Diego, but at this point, police reports are still being written. this may be a mystery that can be solved. And there could be nothing to it, right? It could just be a young man in turmoil. But it's very odd that no one is saying, because nowadays we get these crazy mass shooters and people are like, yeah, I've thought, because now we know what a mass shooter looks like. We've had so many of them. We actually can now profile them pretty well. This guy just played a lot of Call of Duty, wanted to be a cop, and then he ends up on the top of a mountain with a message saying, I am not a killer, I just wanted to see the caves. And here is, again, another puzzling bit. I said there's two parts of this that are so bizarre. We're going to end it with this one. The police come in, they find Diego dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. There's a message on the wall that says, I am not a killer, I just wanted to see the caves. The police aren't sure that Diego wrote that message. Someone else may have written that message on the wall. Which, I mean, at that point, it becomes an even bigger mystery. What is going on at the top of that mountain? Is there truly a mystery hidden in the endless cave system of a theme park in Colorado? Or is it just the sad story of a young man who planned on carrying out an atrocity and shot himself instead? We don't know, but it's an absolutely bizarre mystery. And if someone else wrote that message, then all bets are off. Because they're saying, we don't... it's interesting to think they did not clarify if the message was written in blood or anything like that. Obviously, if it was written in blood, you would assume that someone else would have had to do it because he shot himself in the head. But, I mean, and it was interesting. I saw two articles that say to the police, do not know for sure that he had written that message, which totally opens everything up. Truly a mystery, a tragic mystery, for sure, but a mystery nonetheless. Sovereign, I'm going to go ahead and toss you the keys of the Carpenter Copter. We are leaving behind Colorado. What a mystery. What a bizarre story. Fly us all the way out to Canada. We're headed all the way out to Canada. Specifically, we're headed to a place called Winnipeg. That's in Manitoba, Canada. It's September 2015. We're going to walk into a little grocery store. And we're about to meet a man. He didn't give his real name. We're going to go ahead and call him Philip. And now that I think about it, there's actually a pretty big listener base in Canada. I don't know how big the city of Winnipeg is. It's probably no New York or San Francisco, but it might be sizable. Maybe some of you guys could be able to look this up. Hold on before you do, because this might be a real threat if you came across this thing, like a life-changing threat. But Philip described where this story took place at a Korean community grocery store. So I think it really, I'm sure, like in most big cities, they have like a little Tokyo and a little China. And it's where all of the immigrants and their families and the generations after them will tend to set up shop, live. It's just, you know, you have a nice little slice of home in your new home. So if there is a little Korea, if there's a place in Winnipeg that's the Korean district, you could just go to all the grocery stores in the area. You're getting all fat. You're eating all candy. You're like, each time I stop at a grocery store, I must ask questions and eat evidence. Yum, yum, yum. Send me a Canadian, whatchamacallit. You're walking around all these community grocery stores, these Korean community grocery stores. So there could just be the one. I mean, you could be in Winnipeg. You're like, oh, I know exactly where he's talking about. And I'll never go there again. It's absolutely terrifying. We're in this little Korean community grocery store. That's where Philip's at. Philip says he's just picking up a couple items. He's walking up to the front counter. It's a normal day, right? We've all done this. We've all shopped at a grocery store. That's when he notices this other customer who he said, I see this woman, she's looks like she's in her mid-20s, and she's short, you know, he doesn't have a lot of descriptors for her, but, you know, just an average-looking person. But what was not average about her, Philip goes, you could tell that she seemed to be on drugs. Or even worse than someone who's on drugs, someone who... Actually, now that I think, I don't know which one of these is worse, but You know somebody who's currently on drugs, that's not fun. But then someone who is a drug addict but doesn't have those drugs. So they're going through detox. They're all like twitchy and all going through withdrawal and stuff like that. That would not be fun. That would not be the, that sucks, right? What's worse, a junkie or a junkie looking for a fix? Anyways, that's where he's at right now. He's in this grocery store and he sees this young woman come in and he goes, he also said she was cute. I guess I should add that as a descriptor as well. If you're in Winnipeg, you're like, I think he's describing my girlfriend. Oh, I hope he doesn't add that she's cute because my girlfriend's cute. If you're dating a short woman in her 20s, well, actually, the story took place about 8 years ago. So if you're dating a short woman in her 30s who's twitchy and cute, you might be dating the person in the story, which I hope not. This girl, she's short, she's twitchy, she's cute, and she catches Philip's eye, and he starts kind of eavesdropping on what's going on. She's looking for matches. She comes into the grocery store wanting matches, but she's broke. She doesn't have any money to get the matches that she needs, and Philip's hearing all this stuff, so Philip goes up, and he talks to the cashier, and he goes, I will buy the matches for her. I mean, what is it, like a buck or two? I'm assuming it's just like a little matchbook or whatever. I will buy the matches for her. Not a big deal. And as he's having this discussion with the cashier, something catches the corner of his eye. He said that he turned and he looked, and he's looking at this woman. Short, cute, twitchy woman. But behind the woman, and not even really behind is the best way to put it, entwined with the woman from behind. He sees this entity he describes as, quote, darker than dark. He says the way that it was that this thing was taller than the woman herself. And the woman's arms were wrapped up by these black tendril-type arms. And her legs had the same thing. It was like this entity was just hooked onto her, wrapped around her, controlling her. He said he got a good look at it because he turns and he looks and he sees this thing. He goes, it was darker than dark, but its eyes were a bright white. He said they were diamond shaped and they were like horizontally diamond shaped, bright white eyes. And the way the thing moved, because it wasn't just that he saw for a split second. It wasn't a trick of the light. As this thing was moving, as she was moving, he said it reminded him of, quote, it was moving like iron fillings would shift as you moved a magnet. Seemed to control her movements. It was entangled with her arms and her legs, almost like a marionette being controlled by a puppeteer. And he's looking at her, and what do you say, right? Like, you would think if you saw this out of the corner of your eye, you would turn and it would disappear. It was just a trick, right? It was, you're tired, you saw something weird. No, he turned, he's looking at it, he's clearly seeing this thing moving. And then this entity's head, and then the entity turns its head and stares directly at Philip. Philip's not looking at the girl eye to eye. He's looking at this creature eye to eye. And he goes, a thousand emotions jumped through my body at the same time. He said, the only thing I could think of to stay safe was to let it think I did not see it. He felt if he showed fear, something bad was going to happen. If he fled, something bad was going to happen. If he said to the woman, what's going on? There happens to be a dark mass attached to you. If he tried to approach it in any other way, something bad would happen to him. He goes, what I did was I pretended that I couldn't see it. I pretended that I was just looking over the top of the girl, because this thing is taller than she is, and just kind of looking at the wall behind it. He goes, I had to convince this thing that I did not have the ability to perceive it. The clerk hands the woman the matches that Philip had just bought. The woman picks the matches up and begins to walk away. And Philip said, I refused to watch it leave the building. I just kept staring where I was staring. And when the girl got the matches and began to walk out of my field of view, he goes, I did not turn to look at her. I did not turn to look at it. I just continued to stare off into space, off into the corner of the wall, wherever he was looking, to make this thing truly believe that I did not know it existed. To make this thing truly believe that I did not know it existed, because if it knew that I knew the truth, something bad was going to happen. Now, obviously, from the title of this episode, I think you guys know what angle I'm going with this. And if you haven't listened to the episode, it'll be in the show notes, but I'm going to just kind of do a rough run through here. There is this thing, it started off on the conspiracy theory iceberg. There is this entity known as the Solar Plexus Clown Glider, which apparently is an entity that feeds off human misery. It can latch themselves onto us and some cases control us, sometimes just fill our life full of hate and misery and violence, and it feeds off all the negative emotions, so it likes to dwell in those. And in that episode, I mean, obviously I go into more detail in that episode, but in that episode, I state that I had an encounter with one of these things. And I tell the story about how when I was in college, I was taking a law class. It was like introduction to law or something. It wasn't nothing fancy. And one of the things we had to go and we had to sit in a trial. We had to go sit in a trial. And I chose a trial at random and I went to the Sacramento County Courthouse and I sat down with my notepad. And I remember I was sitting in the back row of this courthouse taking notes and something caught my attention in the corner of my eye. And I turned and I looked and sitting in the chair next to me, I look over and I see a king cobra. Which obviously there wasn't a real snake in there. My brain knows there's not a king cobra snake in the Sacramento County Courthouse sitting in the back row. I turn and I look and it's coiled up. And it kind of makes this movement that's so vivid and so animated, it shocks me. And I go, and it disappeared. And for the next, what happened was, it was really simple. My back got hurt. I remember this very clearly. Now, I've been in a ton of car accidents. I've been in a lot of fights. I'm not made of adamantium. I have a lot of back issues, brain issues. Obviously, you're like, I don't know if that's a brain issue. You just are too lazy to look up pronunciation of words. I can't tell time. That's a big part of it. I can't tell time, but from multiple concussions. But I remember, like, I'd been in a bunch of car accidents previous to this. My back was totally fine. But I remember I left the courthouse that day and I was like, man, I think it was the next morning I woke up. I was like, wow, my back really hurts. And I go, I think it's because I was sitting in that courthouse in that cheap plastic chair for so long, my back's sore. And I had back pain from car accidents, but it had been treated, it had all gone away. And then I remember the back pain lingered for a little bit longer. This was back in the early 2000s. Well, I went to the doctor and said, hey, doc, I'm having a really hard time. Like, sleeping, my back hurts, like I have this really sharp pain in my lower left back, and my doctor wrote me a prescription for 120 Vicodin. A month. Because I had a little bit of back pain. And after about a year, he increased it to 240 Vicodin a month. Which I was on for years. Now, if you don't know about opioids, just a little primer. If you find yourself in possession of 240 Vicodin on a month, right? You're never going to run out. You will find yourself in quite many bizarre escapades over the course of 5 years. Now, I was never a level-headed person before that. And I hung out with some rough individuals. But when you're taking in that many, because I would use 240 opioids. I'd use 240 Vicodin a month. That's what I was given. That's what I would use. I mean, nowadays, you're like, Jason, how did you have a job? Did you drive? Please don't tell me you were driving a car. You're trying to do the math your weight. You're like, that's almost 10 pills a day, Jason. How, is your kidney still alive? Can you imagine that? The doctor would get arrested nowadays with this early 2000s. And I did, man. My life hit the skids for a while. And listen, it's never been on the best. It's never been on the Autobahn. Let me back up. My life, I love my life. I love the adventures I've had and the friends that I've made. Let me back up. I say, it hasn't always been easy. And sometimes I've made it less easy than other times. I love it. I've had a great life. But you know what I mean? Like, I've invited conflict into my life that didn't need to be there. When you're getting 240 Vicodin a month, your life's going to be rough. You're going to have a pretty crazy life. That's just the way that it is. Imagine drinking that amount of alcohol. It's a lot. It was a lot. And I mean, I remember, like, again, like, everything was just falling apart. And you just kept getting more pills. And I remember after, eventually that I changed doctors and they're like, oh my God, I'm not giving you this many pills. We're immediately starting to taper, and in like 9 months, you're not going to have anything. Might have even been like in 6 months. And I'm fine now. Like, my back still hurts, but I take Tylenol. I take Tylenol and aspirin for my back. You know, I get muscle relaxers from time to time, whatever. But I remember that happening, and I remember when I woke up, the pain in my back. I remember connecting it to the courthouse, but I didn't really connect it to the snake. It wasn't until years later. All this stuff happened in the early 2000s. Now we're in 2018 when we're starting the podcast, and I start reading about these solar plexus clown gliders. And I started reading about these solar plexus clown gliders, these entities that can latch onto you. And I told that story I just told you. And I go, that might have been what that was. And the idea was, is that I always felt, listen, I'm in a courthouse. It's a place of human misery. A courthouse is where something always goes wrong for one person. Civil trial, criminal trial, it doesn't matter. There is always an aggrieved. Sports stadiums, yeah, your team could lose, but you could still have some memories from going and watching the big game with your buddies, blah, 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 blah. This, how is it a courthouse? Like, you'll have half the people happy and half the people in misery. Custody battles go wrong. Criminal trials, civil suits, all sorts of stuff. And I remember, like, years later, because I didn't immediately go, aha, a demon must be attached to me. And I never really even classified it as a demon. I didn't make this connection, but later on, when I was looking at solar plexus clown gliders, I thought, what if that was something that somebody else had left behind? They had this entity on them, and it rode them as long as it could, and then detached itself, and it knows that people are going to come into the courthouse, and they're going to be at the lowest point of their life, and I wasn't at the lowest point of my life, but it attached itself to me, because I reacted to it. It's possible if I saw it and I looked at this thing and I didn't do anything, it wouldn't attach to me. Now, listen, I'm fine. I didn't catch any charges. I didn't do anything too crazy. 5 years of opioids, right? But that's not to say that something couldn't have gone wrong during that period. That's a lot of drugs. So, What does that have to do with this story? This is so bizarre. Because I told that story 5 years ago, and I experienced it around 20 years ago. The other day I'm reading this story, I got this story on phantomsandmonsters.com. It like just came out like a couple weeks ago, right before I went on break. It actually came out right before I went on break. I almost tried to rush the story. I was like, no, I gotta take some time with this. I read the story on phantomsandmonsters.com. Philip is talking about this thing. He's seen it. He's describing how it looks, how it's wrapped around her. And he says that it looks... This is trippy, man. This is so trippy. He said, I described all of it, but I left out the description of its head. He described it as looking like a, quote, planarian worm. And I go, what's a planarian worm? I didn't immediately draw up any visual for me. Planarian worm is a worm. The head flares out on both sides like a cobra. These two stories are separated by decades, by countries, by experiencer. When you experience it yourself, you try to put it into words. I mean, obviously, I don't know what that was. I never classified it as a demon, and I may have from time to time. See, when I was on all those drugs, I didn't think anything was wrong. When I was taking all of those opioids, because I was given, this was the big problem, when the doctor was giving them to me, I didn't think there was anything wrong with being that high all the time. I was high all the time. And I just thought it was normal because the doctor was prescribing them to me. But it did, like, there were, again, nothing super dramatic, but there were times, right? Or I shouldn't have been driving a car. Because I was way too inebriated, but this is what the doctor's given me, and this is how I feel all the time. You know what I mean? It's dumb when I look back on it. I was like, dude, why would you have taken those? Like, you could have sold them. You could have made a lot of money. Dude, it's like $5 a pill. It'd be like $1,000 a month. But you know what I mean? And I didn't think, oh, this is all connected. During the time of my life, the reason why my life is so bad was because it all started. But I always remembered where my back pain started. That's a weird thing, because I'll often say, I have shoulder pain from a car accident, but if you ever ask me which car accident started it, I don't remember. Because I've been in so many. There was obviously one car accident in particular that hurt, but I remember. But I remember when my back started hurting like that, and it was in that plastic seat. I have a clear memory of when that started. Even though I'd been in four car accidents before that, if people ask, when did your back pain start, I would say, well, you know, I'd been in a couple car accidents, but oddly enough, it got worse the day I was sitting in the back of a courtroom. I see what is an entity that I can only describe as a king cobra, because I don't know what a planarian worm looks like. And he sees this thing, and he describes it as a planarian worm. Like entity, he said it. He even drew a picture of it. He drew a picture of like where the girl would be and how it was attached. And its head, it's a little more diamond-shaped on the top than a king cobra. But what are the chances of two people telling these stories decades apart, right? He just sent this in to Phantoms and Monsters. What, I mean, it's and it's such a specific look. But not exact. If he said it looked exactly like a king cobra, you could go, well, Jason, maybe he listened to the podcast, because you do have a lot of listeners in Canada, and maybe this, and maybe he's making it up to fool you. You know what I mean? Like, it's close enough to be weird and not so specific to make you think that it's fake. Is this thing, this solar plexus clown glider, which we would assume there's more than one, but is what it was trying to do to me, it was doing to her? And really, I say trying to do to me. Listen, I'm sure it ain't pretty well off me if it's feeding off negative emotions. And I would have been in early 2000s, I don't know how old I was, 20, 24, 25, 28? I don't know. Maybe older. I don't know. I think it probably would have been, I don't know. Anyway, I'm getting a headache. I hate doing math. But the point is that I'm sure it fed good because the hostile energy, the depression, right? That was a time period where I wasn't creating anything at all. I wasn't writing, wasn't making music at that point. Definitely wasn't doing the podcast. I was barely able to maintain a job. I mean, I was high all the time. And the doctor kept giving me more of it. And I was just like, this is just, oh, I can just keep taking this. And it's still, you know, I'm not blaming the doctor. Don't get me wrong. The doctor was getting the medical companies are saying this stuff's totally fine. It's not addictive. Don't worry. So I'm not blaming my doctor. I'm blaming everyone, including myself, because now I've learned to become my own advocate when I go to the doctor. And I'll research medicine before I take it. Like, I got recently had a bad cough, and they gave me these things called Tessalon pearls. I've never taken them. I came home, and it's like, side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, auditory hallucinations. I was like, wait, that's one of the normal side effects? That's not even, like, a bad one or a rare one? I was like, I'd rather have a cough than hallucinate. Anyways, the point being is that I'm wondering if this is the true description of a solar plexus clown glider. It is a worm slash snake type entity with the flared head. Two sightings now. We now have two sightings of an entity that pretty much does the same thing and latches onto a human body and gets you in a situation where you are taking drugs. I don't think the creature then latched onto my doctor and made him prescribe me Vicodin. Every doctor was prescribing Vicodin back then. But this entity may have put me in a situation that made me call up the doctor. Like, it basically what I'm saying is, in my case, the entity was causing the pain. So, I mean, this is so puzzling to me. And again, I love that original story. And the episode is definitely in show notes. But now we have another one that seems to be the same entity. What do I always say? Once could be a fluke. Two is a, I don't know, I should have written it down anyways. It's a pretty good saying. My point is that we found two stories now, mine and this one. This entity out here with this flared head that does seem to particularly like to leech off humans with drug problems. And the scary thing is you go, okay, sure, we will accept that these two stories are true and that this might be a thing. Then what? I mean, like, do you exercise it? Is there anything, way to remove it? I mean, I don't believe that it's attached to me anymore, but I don't believe it's attached to me anymore because I stopped using drugs. And like I said, I wasn't mentally addicted. I don't think it ever fully intertwined on me. But this poor woman, you know, it's part of her physical form now. She's walking, it's making her move, or walking with her. Is it hitching a ride, or is it controlling her? We don't know, but I mean, it's just terrifying. And it's a entity that we don't have any paperwork on. It's kind of like the Shadow Man. We don't know where they come from. We don't know why they're here. We don't know why people see them. I've seen Shadow Men. Shadow Men are fairly recent paranormal phenomenon, really the last 30 years. You don't go back. I mean, you might be able to go back and look at old sleep paralysis stories, but a lot of times that was the old hag. The Shadow Man being around, not in a sleep paralysis setting, but as an entity, they're fairly recent. You may find shadowy figures in old ghost reports. I'm talking about a Shadow Man, which is different than a ghost. Again, you know, it's such a bizarre scenario. If we can't do anything to stop them, I mean, it almost sucks to know about them. And really, to be fair, I think that's why Philip escaped unscathed. I mean, imagine if he had reacted to this thing. This poor woman was already going through a drug detox. I'm sure this thing was feeding good off of her, but it could have instantly detached from her and hopped on Philip had he reacted to it. And now it takes another young life. It takes another man and puts him in. It's weird because, like, how would that mechanism work? Like I said, it didn't attach the doctor and make him prescribe me drugs, but it put me on a path where I would call up a doctor at a period in time where they would just give you. And here's the thing. I keep saying I dodge a bullet. I had friends of mine who didn't. I have friends of mine who got caught with that stuff, who lost jobs for their opioid abuse, right? Like, I saw it happen to other people around me getting pulled over. You know what I mean? Like, so I consider myself very lucky that I came out of that unscathed. The most I have is some crazy stories, right? Some crazy stories, some close calls. People lost their lives. People ruined their families over the same amount of pills or even less than I was getting. I know that I'm very, very lucky. That was a moment in American history where people were just be given opioids for everything. A little bit of back pain. It's weird because this story's kind of go back and forth between my own personal story and this one. Let me try to wrap it up. Like I said, I was going to do 5 minutes ago. What is this thing? We don't know what it is. We don't know how to stop it. We don't know much about it. We only know that it's incredibly dangerous. And now we have two accounts of it, mine and Phillips. And I think we have learned something about the solar plexus clown glider. If you see it, you have to ignore it. I reacted to it. And I think that is what almost invited it into my life. Had I done what Philip did and just pretended I'd never seen that snake sitting on that chair, that king cobra, would I have woken up the next morning and my back been totally fine? How many people get back pain from sitting in a plastic chair that lasts days and days and days to the point where they have to make a doctor's appointment? Had I not reacted to that, now that I hear his story where he says he just ignored it, looked through it, it made that weird motion. It kind of made this weird thing that made me react to it the way you would naturally react to a snake. If I just looked over and saw the snake for a split second and it was gone, I would just chalk it up to a million different things. But it made that motion and it kind of made me flinch. If you see it, ignore it. That's really the only thing we can take away. It's the only fact that we can assume about the solar plexus clown glider and their weakness. But really, I mean, the best case scenario is you never see one in the first place. Because these things love to feed off human misery. And they're always hungry for more. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at Facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal, conspiracy, and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day. I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great one, guys. I'm glad to be back. Thanks for coming back. Thanks for sticking around. I love you guys.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.